Welcome to Belonging and Beyond podcast for immigrant and refugee women, where we'll be having deep conversations about belonging, spirituality, and healing.
There it is. Okay. So we're ready to start. So today I am interviewing and having a conversation with Nyla. She's my friend and somebody that has been on her journey for years. And I won't put words into your mouth, so I'm just going to just start asking you a few questions about yourself and your experience of also immigration, sense of belonging and home. So those are going to be just weaved into our time together. All right. So can you start off by sharing a little bit about your immigrant journey and what that looked like?
Yeah, so my family immigrated to Canada from East Africa, from Tanzania. There was a lot of political upheaval back in the early 70s. And Canada, along with a few other countries, accepted a lot of refugees from East Africa. I was six when we left Tanzania, Dar es Salaam, and we traveled. My mom was pregnant at the time with my youngest sibling, my brother. So we traveled to Dhaka, which is in Pakistan, where my uncle and aunt and my cousins lived. She was very pregnant. And we were there for about 6 weeks, and my brother was born there. And then from there, we traveled to Toronto, to London, where we were there for probably another 6 weeks. This was my mom, my sister, myself, and my newborn brother. My dad had already come ahead to Canada. He started off in Toronto. Look for a job, I think, here for a little while, and then ended up in Vancouver. And while that was kind of going on, we were making our journey, and then ended up joining him in Vancouver. It was our family. A lot of my cousins and their families came at the same time. In fact, we all were living in the same apartment building, not in the same apartment unit, but in the same apartment building. For a good year or so. It was a big change. I remember our plane landing in Vancouver from London and seeing snow for the very first time in my entire life.
What was that like?
It was magical. I didn't know what to even make of it. It was really, really magical. And it was cold, right? It was very cold. We landed in October, and it was, looking back now, I understand that it was one of the coldest, snowiest winters Vancouver had ever experienced.
Wow.
It was just a really interesting time. I was especially close to my dad, and he had been gone for a long time. So it wasn't only coming to Vancouver, a new place, but it was reuniting with my dad again. I just remember coming into the apartment that he had for, I think we had must have been a 2-bedroom only. Seemed massive, but I was little. And my sister and I shared, but it came into the bedroom, and my dad had put a doll on each of our beds.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. It was
an interesting time for me, though, because there was the feeling sort of part of this whole, because the whole family was in this building together, and there were a lot of shared meals, and we must have looked like little ducklings, because my cousins and I all had the same jackets, and we would all walk to school together in a line, when I got to school and it was in my classroom, just felt very different from everybody else. My skin color for sure, you know. Everything was new. Everything was new.
Is that, would you say, was that the kind of the defining moment where you started to feel like you didn't quite belong? Or when was that, when did that feeling of not belonging sort of settled in?
It's interesting because as I was telling you that there was I didn't experience a sense of belonging with my family. Like we were all in that same building. And we would have meals together. And so we were around each other a lot, but it's interesting as I was telling that story, because I wasn't feeling really connected to anybody. I wasn't feeling already that feeling of, yes, they're my family, but I don't feel necessarily a sense of belonging. I guess it was almost like I didn't necessarily, it was, I wanted to say safety, but I wasn't feeling, and I don't know if I was just picking up on everybody's anxiety. We were together, but and I probably wasn't doing very much on my own at all. But I also didn't feel like connected. When I went to school, I think that was heightened because we were all in different grades. We were all different ages, so none of us were in the same classroom. Mm-hmm. And what happened there, there was this one girl in particular. She didn't bully me, but I still to this day remember her. Mm. And the way she would look at me, and she was like, kind of like, there was just like this, like, why are you here? And I'm better than you. Even at that age, I was seven, and I still remember what felt like her kind of looking down her nose at me.
Yeah, I can imagine how, you know, it felt for a seven-year-old to just sort of be treated that way or even look that way, where you already have that sense of not quite feeling connected. And then here's someone who's even seeing you as an inferior.
Right. And I don't think I made friends that year. I don't think I made friends that year, because the first sort of recollection I have of a friend was a year later. After a year and a half later, after we had moved. So I don't think I actually, I probably went to school with my cousins and was at school and probably all left together.
Yeah, I can relate to that one. Difficulty finding friends, making friends, even knowing how to start conversations. And it almost seems like, so coming from so different countries, different sometimes perspectives. And I get that. So if you were to just kind of, I know we've talked about belonging for a long, long time already, but in a way, if you were to sort of describe or give me a sense of what belonging means to you, what it feels like to you, what is it that it inspires in you or brings up in you when you hear that word?
I think first and foremost, it feels like safety. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, it's safe to be me. Like, it's just safe to just be who I am. I can say what I want to say. I can do what I want to do. I can be who I am. Mm. And there's no consequence. Nobody's going to leave me. Nobody's going to get angry with me. Nobody's going to punish me. Nobody's going to... So I think at its the baseline, that's what belonging feels like. But when I take it deeper, then it's sort of, there's sort of then there's also connection. So there's a sort of baseline of safety, but then there's the ability to sort of get to know each other, you know, to be able to, in that safety, be able to, in our case, like, I feel, like I can say anything to you and, not only just say anything to you, but it's every time there is a conversation, the connection sort of deepens. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not just talking about the weather all the time, or you know, we're talking about things that are, you know, things that are important. What I'm struggling with, what I'm excited about, what connection also for me implies shared experiences, you know, and so for example, I know there are a lot of people right now. I'm in this position right now because I've moved away, where I'm spending a lot of time connecting with people that are my friends over the phone, or sometimes Skype or Zoom, and it's important, it's good for me, but it's not enough for me. Like there is something for me that I need to be spending time with people. I need to be in their space. I need to be doing things with them that we enjoy together, to really feel connected. And honestly, that sense of belonging, I mean, they're so tied together for me, you know? I don't know if that answered your question.
Yes. As I heard you say that safety is one of the primary elements of belonging, that you can be yourself, who you are, and you're not going to be judged. Nobody's going to be angry with you about that, about being yourself. And then I heard connection is also definitely a part of it, where you want to be spending time with people, shared experiences, having shared experiences. And
I would say also that I honestly the way I think about connection, that was just one dimension of it. I think there's sort of, with connection, there's sort of three levels for me. There's the connection with myself, which I think is really important, because I think the more disconnected I am from me, the less able I am to connect with somebody else, you know? So there's the connection with myself, there's a connection with somebody else, and then there's a connection with the divine, which I strive to cultivate every day and deepen. They feed each other for me, you know?
Absolutely. Yes, I hear you. Yeah. And since you're touching on the divine, one of the questions I had for you, how did you open up to spirituality? How did that journey begin? What was that experience like? And if you could share more about your spiritual journey.
Yeah, so I was this is one of those other areas where I sort of, the experience of not belonging, I think, started very early for me. So I was raised in a faith. I was raised in a family that practiced faith, where the community that we were a part of was very much tied to a religious community, you know. And in that, my parents found a lot of support. They found their friends and their, you know, colleagues, and especially when we were in Africa. You know, things when they moved, that shifted for them. For me, It always felt like I was in the wrong place. I never quite connected from a place where, you know, the story I give you is that sometimes I would watch my dad when he would pray, and there would just be this kind of look that he would have that just was like very peaceful. And it was, I guess I was assuming what he was feeling. And I never felt it for me. I never felt it for me. And a lot of the prayers were in a different language, and perhaps that was part of it. There was this barrier. We were learning what the meanings were and things like that, but it was just so, it just felt very foreign and ill-fitting from a very, very early age. And I just found myself for a long time, trying to force myself to fit. And trying to make, I mean, this is going to sound very strange, but there was a part of me that married my ex-husband because I thought he would help me get kind of on the right path with things. So that was one piece of it, where the religious kind of context and all of that just never fit. But from a very young age, there was always like a curiosity and a sense of there's something more bigger, you know? And I would remember sometimes I would be reading something and there would be a sentence that would just like touch me in a way that I couldn't quite explain, but I could feel, like, now I know that some part of me connected with a bigger, wider consciousness in that moment. But I didn't have the vocabulary for it. And then I would get so excited about it, and I would try to explain it to somebody, and they just kind of would look at me, and I'd say, it's not really the words, but you understand, you know? And I'm just really aware, as you ask that question, how many times I sort of had that experience in my life, where there was some part of me was connecting with something bigger, and I couldn't quite put words on it, but it filled me. It just filled me with excitement, like I had discovered a truth with a capital T, you know, in that moment. It took me a long time to walk away from the faith that I was raised in. Part of that process began an exploration into spirituality. I went to USM with no real that was my first real, I had worked with somebody who did some Reiki on me, which was probably the beginning of any kind of understanding of something energetic. But probably my first exploration of anything that was sort of spiritual in nature began when I went to USM. And it was one of those things where there was just this knowing that I had to go there, and I did not know why. And I followed it. And that was probably the beginning of my spiritual journey. I have meditated off and on. Now, the interesting thing about the faith I was raised in is meditation is a part of the practice. There's a very sort of esoteric component to it, which I think was sort of the seed was planted in me, you know. So meditation has sort of been practiced in different forms, in various stages of my life.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, you know, and I would say this in general, I'm kind of a seeker. There is not a, like, I wouldn't say to you, I am a Buddhist, or I am a this, or I'm a, you know, mm-hmm. or of that guru, or I'm just cultivating my own connection with the divine, and I take the wisdom from where I get it, and I just trust that when it's a truth with a capital T for me, I will feel that, mm. right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I love that. Yes. Yeah. Wow. Yes, and one of the questions that is also emerging is when you spoke of, you know, that moment when you spoke about this feeling of excitement and something you just kind of felt in yourself and you can kind of express it in words. I'm curious, like, what else has been touching you in this way? What other experiences or moments in life have touched you? Or even in general, what touches you? What touches your heart?
What touches my heart? I'm kindness. When I witness kindness, a lot of these sometimes, one of the positive things about social media is that they're all often these videos that go viral of somebody doing something kind for somebody else, you know.
Mm. Can you give me one example of what?
I remember one that I saw recently, and I can't right now for the life of me, but
so it's kindness. Okay.
Yeah, they're just certain videos where people do something for somebody that they don't need to. Oh, I saw one the other day where it was a video of an old man that had gone to a fast food restaurant or a restaurant and had expressed to his waiter that basically that he was alone, lonely, didn't know anybody, that, you know. And it was just the waiter had taken his meal break and come and sat down with this guy. And he sat down and he had, you know, he shared a meal with him and had a conversation. I can't remember if that was a video or just a photo that was posted with the story, but I think that touched me. That touched me because it wasn't only kindness, but I think you know, there's such empathy there, and there was that. I think the part of me that feels lonely a lot was very touched by it.
Mm.
Was very touched by it.
Mm. And can you tell me a little bit more about that? What exactly touched you? Like, if you were just to sit with that a little bit, to just kind of dissected a little bit more.
What touched me, I guess, was that he was able to feel, he just saw what this man was going through, and instead of sort of he did what he could. He did what he could to make a difference for, even if it was just for 15 minutes.
Mm.
You know, that he didn't just ignore it. And he could have.
Yeah. Right.
He could have just, he could have ignored it. He could have not noticed it. And that he noticed it, that he understood that this person needed something, that he understood that I can give this person something of myself and make a really positive difference. You know, I can't change his whole life, but I can make a difference for him.
Mm.
You know.
Mm. Mm. Okay. So it's kind of a combination of kindness, you know, as I heard you, and making a difference in someone's life.
Mm-hmm. making a difference.
And I could also feel care, like somebody who cared.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It wasn't just talking about it. Like, didn't just, oh, I feel, you know, I feel so bad for that. He's so lonely. And like, he didn't just go over to his coworkers and talk about it. And, you know, it's too bad that he's got nobody and that kind of thing. But he just kind of looked inside himself and said, you know, how can I make a difference for this mm-hmm. person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what he's going through has touched me. Mm-hmm. What can I do for him?
Yeah, and it's that kind of also these two polarities of indifference and care. Like somebody could have been indifferent, right? And just walked away.
Yeah.
Yeah, versus being, you know, sharing something with someone who demonstrates, who kind of like takes care of your need in some way. You know, in that case, there was a need for connection that this man had. And
yeah, and as I think about it, as you were talking, I was just thinking, like, if I put myself in that situation, and even if I'd had that thought, I wonder if I would have said, no, that's weird. It would be weird to go sit over there, you know?
With the lonely man, you mean?
Yeah, like myself. Like, I wonder if I would talk myself out of it. I wonder if that's why I was so touched by what this other
man
actually acted on. Like, so it's one thing to notice, right?
Yes.
And have the impulse to do something loving. And it's quite another than actually act on it.
Yes.
And it makes me ask myself, like, how often do I maybe stop myself? Whether it's like a kind word to someone, like, oh, your hair looks nice today. Like, oh, I can't say that. That's weird, you know? Or if I say that, he'll think I'm flirting when I'm not. Or, you know, I don't want to bother them. I wonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm just touched by the fact that he like acted. He acted on it.
Right.
Right.
Yes, it's like that impulse of love was stronger than maybe the thoughts that might have been arising, even for him in that moment, that he could have said, you know, I'm working right now, I don't have time for this, I have, you know, lots to do. So, but yeah, it's just kind of like trusting that initial impulse and going with it. Yeah.
And I think for me, why it maybe touches a little bit of a nerve is because I think I do have a lot of those impulses, but there's also this other voice that does say, no, that's weird, or that I care too much.
Oh, yeah.
Like somehow, yeah, like I care, like it's I care too much, it's weird, it won't be received, you know, just a lot of chatter. And so I wonder if it's just kind of mirroring back to me the invitation, maybe, that when an impulse like that arises, to just
this is going to be a little bit off the tangent, but it reminds me of the core gifts conversation that we had with Ken Page, and how he invites us to pay attention to what natural gifts we carry that sometimes other people dismiss or not pay attention to. And then I can definitely sense, as even you're talking, that the kindness and that impulse to just care and love somebody mm-hmm. is deeply ingrained in you, and how sometimes, you know, quickly or not so quickly, it gets sidetracked by, you know, thoughts that you have that arise, how am I going to be perceived and received, all that stuff.
Right.
But I feel lit up when you're talking about this impulse to share or to give something or to be kind to another human being. It's like that is so needed in our world right now. That is so needed.
Yeah. I was listening to a TED Talk earlier, a very short TED Talk this morning on loneliness. She was giving two pieces of advice. It kind of ties into this. The one she said, just talk to everybody. So talk to the people you wouldn't necessarily. So if you're going to go get your haircut, talk to the receptionist, talk to the hairdresser, you know, and ask them about themselves. So that's step one. But the other part is to share about yourself, you know, and that's, I think, what we're talking about is that it's sharing of myself, that impulse to take care of or to care or to, you know, just even open a door for somebody, is a way of actually sharing myself. And that's not necessarily verbal, you know. And then, as we've talked about, to really maybe even ask the how are you and mean it, right?
Exactly.
Right, sort of to invite connection.
Exactly. Okay.
Wow. Kind of what this guy did, right? And he sat down, you know, with the how, you know, he probably asked a, how are you? And got a, you know, I'm lonely, I'm alone answer. But then he didn't run away from it, right?
Exactly. I think that that's another fear that we as human beings hold, is that if we share vulnerably about what's going on within us, that we might be rejected, or we might not, we might be seen as weird, or we might, it's like we might get hurt. Like, we're sharing something vulnerable, and if somebody doesn't respond in a way we would like them to, like with love and kindness and care, then there's that fear of like, oh my, I'm being vulnerable and I might get hurt here, or I might actually open up a doorway or a connection to another human being who wants to support me or who wants to be here for me. Right. So it's kind of that risk, like almost like a mini risk that we take in life, right? In okay, that's the way I'm seeing it too. I'm just gonna check on the timing to make sure. Okay, we still have a few more minutes. Is there anything you want to share about healing? Like, what does healing look like for you? What does it mean to you? When did you experience a profound sense of healing? Anything on that topic?
Oh, healing is kind of, I think I've experienced it in many different forms. I mean, so one of the more profound experiences I had in healing happened through Reiki, actually. And I remember it being very visceral for me. So I was working with this Reiki practitioner, mostly, I don't even really know what the intention was, but there was a moment, and we'd been working together for a few months, and I was on her table, and I just had this experience of energy leaving my body. And as it was leaving my body, I was just very aware that it wasn't my energy, like it was somebody else's energy. It was strange for me, because I'd never experienced anything like that in my life. And what I understood as it was happening and after it happened, that it was actually the energy of somebody that I was very much in love with, that was still with me. I mean, I was already married to somebody else for about, I think, 3 years at this point. And yet this person's energy was still in my being. And I was not aware. I was like, I had no awareness of it. I had no awareness of it. At least, I mean, I had no conscious awareness of it, I should say, right? So that was really powerful for me. My body felt different afterwards. I experienced a freedom in it. I don't even know how to explain it, but so there was some healing that occurred there.
I hear you. And was that, how old were you at that time?
Oh my gosh. I was probably my early 30s.
Okay. And I'm just curious, was that the first time you became sort of maybe deepened your awareness of energy, that we also have a body that is energetic? Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was drawn to doing Reiki, but it was, again, it was one of those things that I didn't have like an explanation for. I just felt I had gone to a demonstration and had experienced it. And it was certainly very relaxing. Mm-hmm. And at the time I had Natalia was a toddler, and it was kind of instead of a massage, it was a place to go to really sort of take care of myself, right? But yeah, I think that was my first experience of energy whatsoever. And since then, I've just become aware of how, I don't think before that I was even aware of how aware I am of energy that's around me and my sensitivity to it. Because it was not even because until I was introduced to Reiki, that concept was not even real. I didn't know anything about it. But, the healing, there was a lot of healing that came through my work at USM. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the modalities that I've done afterwards, there's just been different processes, just different ways of thinking even about things, as my awareness, say, of energy has developed, as my understanding of consciousness has developed, as my understanding of our minds and our thoughts, as I've worked with other, I became trained in Reiki, and I've done some access consciousness training. So there's some mind body energetic stuff. So the healing has come in many, many forms, right?
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah, it also reminds me a little bit of when you were talking about Reiki, attending a mindfulness expo yesterday, and there was a woman who was doing a demonstration on Reiki, and how also I kind of see this connection between when she was talking about just kind of that energy of love that flows, and you just kind of are sharing it with the person you're working on. And I could also sense when you're talking about that act of kindness, how that natural impulse in you wants to just kind of share that love or to offer something. And then a part of you is just kind of stopping that and saying, oh, don't go there. But it's almost like it feels to me as you're connecting to that higher source, to that love, there is a part of you that wants to actually give it or share it or even share yourself, because we're not necessarily separate from that love, right? Like we're a part of it. So. Right.
But that judgment, that it's funny, it's interesting you say that, because I got trained Reiki level 2. I never became a Reiki master. But I was very, at one point I thought, let me get trained and it could be part of a coaching practice.
Yes. Yes.
But there is this, no, but it's weird. Right? Always is, but it's weird. Even with tapping, for example, I've used tapping. Tapping, this results from tapping. But it's weird, right? And access consciousness, which I don't know if you're familiar with. I may have shared a little bit about.
Yes.
It is super weird, okay? I mean, they have this clearing statement that goes, everything that is times a gazillion, we destroy and uncreate it all, right, wrong, good, bad, pod, poc, all nine shorts, boys and beyonds. That is the clearing statement.
Wow.
Weird. Wow. Okay.
So
it's funny that you say that, because there is a parallel for me. See, there is that impulse. There's that impulse to share who I am. And it's weird. I probably, as I say that, I realize how often I got called weird. Even to still to this day, I'll say something. For example, my brother lives not that far away, and I can sense his need to to connect more, and yet he doesn't quite know how. So I said, you know, why don't you come over later? You can help us put the ornaments on the tree, and we'll put music on, and you know, make some hot cocoa and all of that. And so it'll be fun. And it's like, oh, well, you know, that's weird. But as he's saying that, I'm thinking, God, I think I've probably heard you're weird or that's weird probably more times I can count about that impulse to like reach out. And even the things I'm drawn to, they're weird.
And would, yeah.
There's this hesitation then, right? To for the longest time, I had all this training, and I've just changed this. I had all this training, access, tapping, probably the two big things. And I didn't even put them on my Reiki. I didn't put them on my resume. Mm. You know, because they were weird. You know, I think I'm weird and not want to hire me. But over the last few months, they're on there under training.
Beautiful.
So I think there's a lot, there's this there, I seem to have this idea that if I share who I am, those things that really do excite me, you know, that I'm going to be labeled as weird.
Which is not true. You know, it's like, and I get this sense of like how you sort of, that label of weird is almost like, it's kind of like became a part of you too. And at the same time, there's underneath of it, I can also sense, and you tell me if this is accurate, like if people are going to think of I'm weird, they might reject me or they're not going to love me. Like, oh, like some kind of a fear that's also sitting underneath of that.
And at is extreme. It's unsafe. Like I will be, you know, they'll throw stones at me. They'll burn me at the stake. They'll, you know, I'll be banished, exiled.
Yes. So yeah, there's some things from this kind of a lifetime, and there could be some other ones from souls. Yeah, past. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and if this was a coaching session, we would dive into that a little bit deeper. But I kind of want to, like pause here. But it's huge what you're sharing, and how in a way also I'm hearing that. I know you're not the only one. I do this too, and I did this to a greater extent in the past. But we hide parts of ourselves in order not to be called weird, right? In order to fit into some mold of normal. Yet as we are hiding these parts of ourselves, we're kind of contorted, like we're not fully expressed. We're not being who we are meant to be in this world. And so, and I can also sense how if we only partially share ourselves, that feeling of belonging can't quite reach us. Like it can't quite sink in. Right. Okay.
Exactly. And I think for me, in a strange way, it's almost it's been like hardwired, like habituated, like because from a very early age, I said, we were surrounded in this religious context, and I didn't feel like it fit for me, but I had to pretend, like I couldn't voice that.
Yeah.
I couldn't voice that, and I had to go along to this event or that. Some of it is when you're a child, you go where your family goes, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
And it was, so it just became that in order to sort of survive, to be part of, that I had to hide parts of myself. And I think that sort of pattern has been ingrained. Do you know what I mean? That idea that I do have to hide these things in order to belong. And yet, like you said, the irony is that it has created for me the sense of feeling like I don't belong. Because there is no, you know, it's well weird because people will feel very close to me because they come to me, they talk to me, this kind of thing. And but I'm not necessarily feeling close to them. I had that experience a lot when I was working for that company for 15 years, you know. I still have people reach out to me now when they want to talk about things. People I don't remember, you know.
Right.
And yet it would never even occur to me to phone them. You know what I'm saying? Because it was never, there was no mutuality there because it was just this way.
Right.
But that's a really important awareness for me. That weird thing is big. And yet it's also to be willing to move past it.
Absolutely.
It's going to be tremendously powerful for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm supporting you with that journey. So
no doubt.
Okay.
You're getting aware of my weird places and
great. All right. So just to kind of maybe bring this into to conclusion and just start wrapping things up, is there anything you want to share with listeners who might be actually watching this interview or, you know, down the road, or anything you feel like is important, like a nugget of wisdom or some kind of a pearl or advice, well, whatever you feel?
I think that the one thing that just comes forward for me, and it's important because I think there has been for me this part that has thought that one day all this work is done, one day you're healed, one day everything is perfect. And I think I'm very aware of right now, just based on the conversation, is that we're all on a journey, right? Mm-hmm. We're all on a journey. And it's going to look very different for everybody. Things come in and they sort of take us to that, to whatever's next, to our next, or the next stage in our evolution, you know? Mm. And it's all okay. Mm. It's all okay, you know? And it probably makes sense when you look back, you know, oh, this led to this and this led to this and this led to this. But I guess if there was anything I would want to share is that, like, we're always okay. We're always okay. And if I could have approached this work slightly differently, any work, any sort of growth, consciousness, healing work, differently than I did, it would be from that perspective that it's really about evolution. It's not really about fixing me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is just sort of the next step in the journey and the opportunity to grow and to evolve, and there's something joyful in that kind of energy, right? Mm. Versus I have to fix this in order to not be weird, or I have to fix that in order to be lovable, or I have to fix this in order to belong, you know, or I have to do these seven things in order to be loved. You know?
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yes. And it's almost like tuning into that impulse of like impulse. It's one thing to love yourself and follow that and trust that impulse of continuing to grow and evolve. And it's another one to feel this impulse of even self-hatred and to go down that pathway thinking I need to be fixed. I need to do this, this and that before I can be loved or accepted or before I can even belong. Mm-hmm. So there's like a distinction between different.
There are a lot of messages from the outside about how to do it right.
That too.
And which implies that somehow you're doing it wrong.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
I'm still working on that, by the way. I'm not there, but I'm always the awareness that there's a helpful consciousness to which to come to all of this work. And there's some that really are really not, you're not really doing yourself a favor because it's just reinforcing some sort of self-hatred or self-judgment or, disdain.
Exactly. Yeah.
Impulse towards perfection, which I don't think is possible.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think what you're sharing is really profound. I think many people on spiritual journeys or just, you know, paths of evolution have not necessarily reached this depth of awareness of really slowing down to notice where is my impulse to, sometimes even to work out is coming from. Is it coming from a place of trying to perfect my body, or it's coming from a place of needing to feel healthy and take care of myself? So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I happen to listen, I love podcasts, as you might know. And sometimes I listen to a lot of different topics, and they range from entrepreneurship to health to, I mean, everything. And there's one that I listened to particularly on health, which I've stopped listening to because there was something, after a while, the energetic of it started to bother me. And I started to realize that the person wasn't sort of cut. It felt to me like the person was not coming at it from the place of how can we get healthier, like how can we make better choices, and or this is a science that can help us, you know, this is the truth of the science kind of thing. But there's like, I just started picking up on this idea. I think this person is just really afraid of death.
Wow.
Because they're so obsessed. They're so obsessed with living like to 180 years old. Mm. Everything is about living to 100. And I was at some point, I go, I don't think I want to live to 180 years old, you know? But you're right. It's fairly new awareness for me, but the consciousness with which we come at everything is important. Like what is the drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it rooted in there is something wrong with me? Or is it rooted in I'm going to take care of me?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
And I think the outcomes change depending
yes.
to it.
Yes, and we feel differently too, because if we're chasing something out there like a perfect body, we're never going to get there, quote unquote. But if we're working out because we want to take care of ourselves or whatever, we're practicing meditation, we're dancing, there's a sense of fulfillment or nourishment that usually comes with that practice or that.
Yeah, I have that experience right now. I'm doing I started doing an online stretching. It's fascia stretching, so it gets much like the that yoga class that you and I used to go to, right? So it really gets it into. And at first, I was, you know, just kind of I need to do some stretching and this kind of thing. But it's gotten to the point where my body actually craves it because it loves it. And it feels like love. I can feel it's like, okay, I'm going to stretch. My body starts getting excited. Like, oh, you're going to do something yummy for me, you know? And that's what you're talking, like how, it's like, that's what the experience of movement should feel like, right? Whether it's dance or for me walking in the woods or doing the stretching, right? Rather than, oh, I'm in a hot yoga class, sweating.
Yeah, and that's...
I'm going to pass out.
Yes, I know. And then that's the sign that you're doing it, quote unquote, right. When you have that feeling of like, you know, nourishment, fulfillment, love, you know, whatever you want to call it. But that's the right path for you.
Yes.
So, and it might look...
So what if we become at everything in our life from that place, right? Just how we're feeling about it.
Exactly. Okay, that's beautiful. So we'll wrap up our conversation on that note.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, me too. I know we could keep going, but I'm just gonna pause the recording for now, and then we'll connect.